Here we go. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about. That's impressive, isn't it? No, they're not applauding for me. President Putin is welcomed like a conquering hero. I know what you're thinking, right? Sure, of course he is. It's North Korea. They have to applaud. I get it. But there's more to this than just the applause. I promise you. I'm going to tell you what it is. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this thing. All right, let's take a look at this one more time here real quick. What you're about to see is the reception that Russian President Putin got in Pyongyang. He hadn't been there since 2000. Is he really going there because he needed for people to applaud him? No, not really. But here it is. You'd think somebody just won the Super Bowl, right? So here it is. To be fair, you or I would probably have gotten a similar applause in a country that is very authoritarian, let's face it. But President Putin did not go there to receive a message. He went there to deliver a message and be seen with that man. And the message he's delivering is meant to be seen and heard by members of NATO. And it's pretty much what he said recently that his message would be. It goes something like this, and these are my words, not his. If you attack my country, if you send missiles into my country, if you kill my people, if you threaten to send soldiers and you work with proxies to go after my country, well then, I too have proxies. I too have missiles. I too have friends. And I too have assets that I can use and do something similar to you than what you're doing to me. That is why Vladimir Putin sent ships to Havana. That is why he's suddenly doing military drills in the Caribbean. And that is why we suddenly see him in North Korea. That's my analysis, by the way. This is what I believe is going on, is what I believe that we're seeing. Mr. Putin and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un did also sign a comprehensive strategic pact yesterday where they're pledging to come to each other's aid in case... I wonder what they're thinking about, in case there is a military attack on either country. So that's the news headline, per se. Here's something else I wanted to share with you. What is the U.S. State Department's spin on Mr. Putin's visit to Pyongyang? Well, they put out a statement saying that Russia is illegally getting weapons and ammunition from North Korea, and that's just not kosher, is what they seem to be saying. Which is, I thought, interesting, Manila, given that, you know, here is the State Department complaining that he's getting weapons from another country that he might use when we're giving weapons to a country that they are already using. In fact, they're firing missiles into Russia. It just seems silly, but it is what it is. Your reaction?
Right. Well, so a couple of things here. I think your assessment is pretty accurate. It's pretty fair. The North Koreans made such a hubbub about this because, like you said, it's been almost a quarter century since any Russian leader, which is Vladimir Putin, has been there. So Kim Jong-un hasn't been ruling that long. So this is a first for him to host the Russian leader. That's why, you know, the big hubbub. But on this new security pact, we have to first underscore that this is strictly a defense pact of mutual aid and assistance should one or the other come under attack. This is not very different than pledges that were made under the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which first came into force back in 2023. So it's kind of like SCO light. What the Biden foreign policy has effectively done here, Rick, is further divide the world rather than bring it together, you know, with the increased use of sanctions rather than dialogue with states that the U.S. deems hostile. I mean, we saw a totally different tack, right, coming from Trump, like him or hate him. He made waves by visiting the DMZ and then stepping over the line into North Korea proper. I think moves like that show the greater strength of your nation and resolve than a bully move like we've seen Biden take over and over. The State Department can make whatever claims it wants, but Russia has shifted their economy and means of production to a war footing, which means ramped up production of materials needed to fight. The U.S. is just angry, Rick, that Russia doesn't buy American-made weapons, and they are jostling with Russia to be the top supplier of arms around the world. That's really the beef here.
My point, and I agree with everything you said, my point is this was less about Kim Jong-un, this was less about Pyongyang, this was less about signing that, important decree they signed. This was more about message sending on the part of Vladimir Putin, the Kremlin, and Russia to the world that says two can play at this game. And I think that's kind of where we are right now.
Totally.
But by the way, Europe is punishing China now, too, with a crazy tariff. I don't know if you've heard about this, but so it's about 40% on their newly designed electric cars. So China's making these EVs, right? The EU is telling the Chinese, no way are you allowed to ship your cars into Europe without us putting some crazy tariff on it. So now China, 40%, that's almost half, right? So now China seems to be saying, okay, two can play at that game as well. So Beijing is considering hitting Europe with a tariff of their own, a tariff on pork products. China gets half of its pork products from Europe, especially Spain. That would hurt farmers and other small businesses. Here's the European Commission spokesperson all but daring China to go ahead and do this pork tariff if they want to. Here it is.
We're not the least bit worried because not all subsidies are the same. And any subsidies that take place under the Common Agricultural Policy or indeed in any other policy area in the European Union are strictly in line with our WTO obligations, and we put the strongest possible emphasis on ensuring that this is the case.
He's obviously not a farmer. I mean, easy for him to say, right? We don't care. What about that poor guy in Spain who's a pig farmer who's suddenly going to have no business? Also, whatever happened to fair trade and democracy and open markets? I'm just asking, Manila.
Well, look, we already know that there's farmers' protests happening all across the EU, and it's not for nothing. And so they can view this as a tit for tat if they want. China's argument to this whole thing is simply that the EU is dumping their pork products into the Chinese market. Now, this week, the Chinese Ministry of Commerce launched an investigation into these practices that could last up to 18 months. Chinese officials say they have levied complaints with the World Trade Organization, which both Chinese and WTO reps say their request meets both parties' criteria for such an investigation. A copy of that complaint was actually made public by the Ministry of Commerce, accusing the EU pork industry of creating overcapacity or oversupply, we might say, and benefiting from those huge subsidies that he was just talking about, which they say has impacted China's domestic pork industry. Now, on the flip side, the EU can't level such a complaint against Chinese EVs, because those are only just beginning to roll out into the global market, Rick.
So, I want to share something else with you now during this segment. During our morning editorial meeting this morning, as we are preparing this show, and we always have these very involved conversation where everybody gets to share their opinions, some members of my team, our team, and these are people that I trust and I think the world of and that are very smart, They told me I should not run this segment that I'm about to show you. They said, don't run this. This is stupid. And the reason they said this is because the guy you're about to see is a guy named Mehdi Hassan. This guy was fired by MSNBC for essentially telling the truth, which makes me like him, because I was fired by CNN for essentially telling the truth. But here's what members of my staff, our staff here on this show, Direct Impact, said. They say that this is a guy, about this guy that you're about to see, Mehdi Hassan. They say that he rarely cared about U.S. foreign policy abuses when it affected other countries, even supported, for example, what the U.S. has been doing in Ukraine. But yet when it comes to Palestine, because he has relationships there and, you know, adheres to that particular ideology, his pro-State Department stance suddenly changes drastically. Maybe a fair criticism. I think people should be allowed, though, to have different opinions and even be wrong about some things and maybe be right about something else. So Mehdi Hassan, I believe, is right on Israel. And this takedown of Israeli commentators at an online debate, I think it's legend, and I think it's worth watching. So here it is.
Let me just deal with something you just said. You talked about debunking propaganda. First of all, you can't even get Israeli propaganda straight. The Israeli government's own security agency, Shin Bet, investigated what you just said and said, no, we found no evidence that workers from Gaza were involved in the October 7th attack. Oh, Shin Bet are lying. They're booing Shin Bet, the Israeli security service. Got it. All right, let me finish my point. You had a five-minute speech from your side. Okay, that's Shin Bet. Let me just deal with your wider point here. Douglas and Natasha tonight want to make this entire debate about October 7th. I get it. It's a horror show. But that's not the debate. The debate was about Zionism, and it tells you a lot that they can't find any arguments to say, as Gideon says, why we can't be allowed to criticize a political ideology that is 150 years old that many Jewish people have criticized from the beginning and continue to do so. They can't tell you why that is. So they focus on October the 7th, which is fine, but if you're going to focus on October 7th, then also focus on what happened since October the 7th, the erasure of Palestinians in this debate, the booing when Gideon mentions what happened to Palestinians. Shameful. I'm sorry to say, it's absolutely shameful in telling about what's going on. Friend of mine, American doctor, goes to Gaza. Many doctors have gone to Gaza. You've seen them on the news. They're all liars, all Hamas, apparently. Friend of mine went to Gaza. He's been to Sudan. He doesn't just use it for whataboutism like Douglas. He's been to Sudan. He's been to Afghanistan. He's worked there. He came back from Gaza and said, I've never seen atrocities like I've seen here. What's happened to children? He's an anti-Semite because he saw children with burn wounds like he's never seen. He saw children with gunshot wounds to the head. To the head, but that's Hamas's fault. Everything is Hamas's fault. So let's talk about war crimes. It is amazing that every human rights group in the world, including Israeli human rights group like B'Tselem, Gisha, Yesh Din, are all documenting this stuff, but you guys think it's all imaginary. So again, it tells you about what Zionism is. This is not about some abstract ideology of, you know, people trying to settle the land and trying to have it. But as Gideon said, there was an argument to be had in the 1940s, 30s, 20s. Zionism today is what the Palestinians are enduring on a daily, nightly basis in Gaza, in the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, in Israel itself. And the erasure of that tells you everything about why we need to be able to talk about what Zionism does to the Palestinians without being smeared as anti-Semites.
Okay. Look, he may be wrong on some things. I'm sure I am too. But that's a very convincing argument that he just made right there. I played you about a minute, 45 seconds of it. He goes on for about 4 minutes. I would encourage you to go see it, listen to it, because the man has something to say. I don't know. We're down to about a minute and a half for this segment. Manila, did you want to take us out on this?
Well, first of all, hot damn. Looks like Mehdi got his groove back on this one, Rick. apart from Mehdi being the number two Russiagator behind Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, he's got this hot take on Gaza for sure, yeah. But he's inconsistent on his foreign policy views. He is very succinct here, pointing out, you know, that nonpartisan aid organizations who are calling this a genocide and calling for immediate ceasefire. And I agree that there is a difference between being critical mm-hmm. of the Israeli government and being an anti-Semite. I think the distinction needs to be made, and because one is simply a political discourse, right? And the other is racism. You cannot conflate the two. Saying Benjamin Netanyahu is a jerk is not the same thing as saying you hate all Jews. And I've heard Hasidic Jewish rabbis say similar things about Zionism and Judaism, that Zionism is a geopolitical hijacking under the guise of religion.
And in the end, what we try to do here and why people all over the world say they like watching our show is because we try and be as transparent as possible. I am not going to condemn someone for their ideology on something I disagree with. It's okay. You can be wrong. And it's from wrong that we often can get to right. And if it takes Mehdi a little longer than the rest of us to understand the world in total and not just the Israeli-Palestinian conflict correctly, then so be it. We'll be sitting here waiting, Mehdi. In fact, you're welcome to come on this show and talk to us, to Manila and I, about this. How's that?
Very fair.
Thank you. All right, so listen, when we come back, I'm going to talk to somebody who just returned from Ukraine, and you're going to be surprised to hear what she saw, what she visualizes, and what she shares about places we're told are not the way she saw them. I'm going to put this all together for you. It's Eva Bartlett. She's going to join us in just a little bit to talk about this. Don't go away.
there's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy. Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet I've been living on now?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
Le Malien de nature est un peuple combatif, un peuple extrêmement attaché à sa terre. Colonisation est venue trouver déjà que l'Afrique en général avait déjà une civilisation.
Donc il y a eu des tentatives de s'approprier certaines parties de notre culture et notre patrimoine.
Et de l'ingérence flagrante des Français a amené à l'amplification du terrorisme dans tout le Sahel. Aujourd'hui, c'est devenu une gangrène partout. Qu'un pays n'échappe à cela.
Pierre vice-président de la République Mali Modibo Keïta, stimule sa industrialisation au Mali. Nous, Français, dès la fiction, je te voyais même pas me chatte.
Moi, je me souviens encore quand j'étais au lycée, je demandais à mes professeurs, mais vous nous avez dit que la France nous a colonisés, mais est-ce que vous pouvez me montrer un bâtiment que la France a construit? La colonisation, partout, c'est la même chose. Toujours, c'est cette pression qui nous empêche de réfléchir, qui nous empêche de voir en nous des gens capables de se prendre en charge.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, it's funny. We were just talking about how we always try to be really transparent on this show. Well, continuing the path of transparency, I had just promised you a while ago that we were going to do this really good interview I've been looking forward to doing with a reporter. Her name is Eva Bartlett. And Eva has been following the story and covering it courageously right there on the border between Ukraine and Russia. In fact, she's filed some recent reports from Mariupol. Now, Mariupol is like a port city right on the edge of Ukraine that is now really more a part of Russia ever since this conflict began. It's currently controlled by Russian forces. What's fascinating about this is that the media has reported this as a city under siege where the people are miserable and the people are extremely unhappy and the people are apparently oppressed. And the city is in ruin. So she, this reporter who I was about to talk to, her name is Eva Bartlett, went there with her camera and shot videos of what it's like in that city. We have some of that video. Let me show it to you. Does that look like a city under siege where people are miserable and everyone is suffering, et cetera, et cetera? Probably not. As a matter of fact, according to her reporting, everything there has been tranquil and the people are just getting by on their lives. And most of the people there relate more to their Russian heritage and descendancy than they do to their Ukrainian descendancy because of the particular geographical part of Russia that is. So, you know, once again, I mean, I'm not trying to make a big deal out of this. It shows once again that the stories that we often get are not exactly as things are. Now, for the transparency part, for some reason, she was on with us moments ago, and we were about to do an interview with her, but it dropped out. I don't know. We're going to reach back out to her and see if we can get her. And if we don't get her today, we're going to get her tomorrow or the next day. But we've lost communication with Eva, and we're not able to do the interview. So I'm bringing back my partner in crime here, Manila, to talk about this. Fascinating.
You got me, Rick. You always got me.
It's the most loyal, dependable partner I could have in this business. It's funny to see that video, isn't it? I always wonder, you know, does it look like Gaza, that part of Russia where Russian troops have moved
right?
in? Because we're told it looks just like Gaza. When in actuality, the numbers don't say that. And here now we have Eva courageously going there with her camera, shooting the city and saying, this is not a city under siege.
Right. No, I watched that whole video. And actually, at certain points of the video, you can see on the streets outside of stores, they have Russian flags on the outside, not even Ukrainian flags. They have Russian flags. At one point, I saw a Soviet flag, but, you know, that's a different story. But yeah, this is life continuing where, you know, we hear in the Western media over and over and over that, oh, Russia's full-scale invasion. But seriously, compare what's going on with Gaza to what you're seeing in Eva's videos. I mean, this is like woman on the street, right? She's walking around with her own camera and she's safe. She's, you know, not being bombarded. She's walking into restaurants, walking up and down the streets. As you can see right there in the video, totally safe people. It's serene. There's people singing on the streets. Life has moved on. It is not under siege. But I say, Rick, the reason mainstream US media in particular and UK media, why they want people to believe that, you know, like the whole of Ukraine is obliterated is because they need to continue this whole financial scheme of taking everybody's tax dollars and funneling it over there.
But you make a great point when you mention Gaza and the fact that there are people here in Mariupol who are actually waving in front of their houses, their choice, the Russian flag. I'm sure there's people there also waving the Ukrainian flag. They have a right to wave whatever flag they want. But I guarantee you there are not a lot of people in Gaza waving the Israeli flag. I just guarantee you there's not a lot of people in Gaza waving the Israeli flag. And the reason I say that is not so much to make the comparison, but because here's my thought process on this, and I think it's really important. Gaza has served as a reckoning for the world and for many around the world to wonder why the United States is telling them these stories about what's going on in Ukraine. Because I would, if I was just an average world citizen and not, you know, Manila or Rick doing a television newscast where I'm paid to share these opinions and investigate these truths, I would say to myself, well, if they're lying to us about what's going on in Gaza and they're telling us that they're just going in there and killing Hamas when we can see with our own eyes that they're killing a lot of innocent people, then why should I believe what they're saying about Ukraine? This is kind of like the linchpin, you know, the turning point. Gaza and what's happening in Gaza has manifested itself almost as a pivotal point in the situation in Ukraine. Do you get my drift on that?
Yeah, I mean, Rick, if you really compare the language that's used in Western media when, I mean, for how many years now have we heard places in Palestine being called the occupied territories, right? That's for a reason. And when you look at the occupied territories, they are in absolute misery. These are like open air prisons that the Palestinians have lived under for several decades. But then you compare, I mean, this video, I mean, the freshest video coming out of Mariupol from Eva Bartlett, you see that you can call Mariupol occupied by the Russians, but I mean, does that look miserable?
And here's forget the pictures. All right, let's suppose somebody staged that. All right, they didn't, by the way. But let's just suppose, pictures. Let's just talk statistics. We now know that they're nearing the 40,000 mark of civilians and Palestinians that have been killed since the Israelis began their attack after October 7th, which was somewhat legitimate for them to be angry about what happened on October 7th and to try and take out members of Hamas. But 36 to 40,000 people are not members of Hamas. We know that. So let's compare that number. Let's suppose it's 36 and not yet 40. How many people have the Russians killed since their invasion of Ukraine? The number the UN uses is less than 10,000. So in one case, you have 10,000 civilians that may have died in one, not combatants. And on the other, and by the way, the Russians have been fighting this war for a lot longer than the Israelis have been fighting in Gaza. So in one case, you got 10,000, and in the other one, you got close to 40,000. Hello? I mean, which one is more of a siege than the other?
Right. And we hear the language continually being used against Russia as full-scale invasion. Well, if that's a full-scale invasion and we look at the numbers that you have just pointed out, then what do you call what's happening in Gaza?
Yeah.
Is that not a full-scale invasion? It is not a Israeli special military operation. There's no exacting and precise movement by the military. It seems indiscriminate. And do we even have a number of how many Israelis have been killed by Israeli forces in this whole madness that's been happening? And you look at a little over two years of what's happening in Ukraine, the conflict that's still ongoing. Of course, it's sad, it's tragic that hundreds of thousands of lives between both sides have been killed. But when you look at the civilian casualty numbers, that tells you everything you need to know about the goals and the aims of the government that is exacting these measures. And what we see the Russian military doing there versus the IDF, I mean,
the
numbers tell the story.
No, absolutely. This is not about taking sides. This is just about stating the facts from a comparative, analytical perspective. And anybody with any sense of propriety would look at this comparative analytical perspective and say, well, in actuality, it looks like somebody's not telling the truth. And look, that's what we try to do. If we're wrong, please tell me how. But hey, you oftentimes tell me I'm wrong, and I thank you for it as well. So,
me and your wife, right?
Exactly, and several others. thanks, Manila. We appreciate your time. Thanks for hanging in there, because we had a little technical flaw we had to get through. And that's our show. Remember, always look outside of your own box for truths. That's what we believe in here. That's why we try to be transparent. We try not to live in our own little boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time right here on Direct Impact.